I'm very happy now to welcome Oliver Prezant. He is music director and conductor of the Santa Fe Community Orchestra and lecturer for the Santa Fe Opera. And Pat McEwen, who is with the Santa Fe Opera Guild. And we're here to talk about the Opera Guild's Opera 101, which is a two-part course for opera novices. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Always a pleasure.
Good to have you both back. So you are teaching this two-part course. What are some of the things that you'll actually be teaching that will help people to understand what the heck is going on the first time they go to the opera?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and I think that's the kind of question that many people have in their mind when they're thinking about the opera, which is such a big part of Santa Fe's culture. And at the same time, people might feel like, oh, gee, I don't know enough to go to the opera, or I wish I could learn more about opera, but I don't want to take a course or something. And this is a really easy way to develop a little bit of a background, enough of a sense of what goes on, get some of the vocabulary, get some examples. And, you know, clearly there's a lot of information on the internet nowadays. There's a lot of information. You can go to a lecture, you can buy a book, you can do all kinds of things, you can get CDs. But when you're talking about opera generally, a 400-year-old art form, it's nice to have somebody to take you by the hand and say, hey, look, this is all a bunch of stories that have been set to music, and you'll recognize them when you see them. And then they get dressed up depending on the culture they come from, depending on the time that they were written in, depending on the director's feeling this time around when he's working on this opera. So there's a lot of tradition, there's a lot of innovation, but mostly opera is a really familiar storytelling form that has some fantastic music in it. And when someone says, you know, I'd like to learn more about opera, what's the first thing to do? This could be the answer to that question. Opera 101.
So you're really approaching it as much through the theater as the music.
Well, it's got to be both, because really an opera is a story. It's not musical theater, and it's not quite theater with music. It's its own art form, for sure. Let's take a simple situation, such as a girl loves a soldier. That's played out over the centuries in many different ways. You know, in a romantic opera from the 1830s, that might be the melodic experience of a lifetime where the characters are relatively unimportant. They're stock characters. But you go a little later, and it's Carmen, and it's a gypsy girl and a French soldier, and it's hot, 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 and it's starting to be closer to reality, and people are getting stabbed. And then you move a little later, and it's the 20th century, and the soldier is coming apart. His captain doesn't like him, and his mistress, she's not even his wife, is fooling around with the drum major from his own regiment, and he's literally fragmented as a personality. And so you can have this...
Which one is that?
That's Wozzeck. That one's actually going up this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. But really the point is to take, you know, you can take one little idea like that and look at it as it plays out over the centuries and say, wow, look at the different musical treatment. Look at the different context in which you find yourself. I mean, once upon a time, opera was the entertainment of royalty. So royalty always came out looking pretty good in those operas. But then as you get into the 19th century, suddenly it's for a more popular audience. Well, how do you bring a more popular audience in? You know, it's got to be more waltzes, more tunes, more dance numbers, more big choral numbers on stage that are going to show what's going on. And of course, all of that even depends on what country it's coming from. So some of the things that we'll explore in Opera 101 are really, why is French opera different from German opera? Why is German opera from Italian opera? And Italian opera is, you know, that's the defining moment. Opera begins in Italy about 400 years ago.
This is very interesting what you said about when opera moved from being only the entertainment of royalty to a larger audience, presumably the rise of the middle class during the 19th century and all of that, bigger audience. Did they demand more realism?
Well, at first, it's not a question of realism, I think. At first, it's really a question of what's going to bring people into the house. And that means stories about an average person or an average situation. Like, here's an opera from the 1830s, La Sonnambula. It's a ridiculous story. A woman is sleepwalking at night in a little town in Italy. Nobody knows that it's their next-door neighbor. Now, this is already hard to imagine. They think it's some disembodied spirit. So they're terrified by the specter. It's just an excuse for great singing. It's a period of time in opera when singing was so exalted. It's called bel canto, beautiful singing, literally. And so you move from there into things that are much more dramatic. You know, a few years later you have Giuseppe Verdi, who's really like the soul of his nation as it's being formed, and the stories are really dramatic and really tragic. I mean, he didn't write a comedy until the very, very end of his life. So towards the end of the 19th century, things really become kind of realistic. And there's an Italian term for that even, verismo, which means it's the truth. It's reality. It's like a reality show. Opera became a reality show.
Only and probably a little more real.
A little more or a little less. I don't really know how to say it, but I think opera was the primary entertainment. You know, when you thought of what is there to do for hundreds of years, it was the number one art form. So another aspect of this program that we'll do is really to take some of the lingo that may be a stumbling block for somebody. Like, what's an aria? Well, an aria is pretty easy to figure out. It's basically a song that someone sings, or a bit of music that an individual sings in an opera versus a duet. You know, you can figure that one out pretty easily. But recitativo is a concept that, when you look at it, recit, recite, then it's closer to understandable. And again, that little moment where you can relax about something and say, oh yeah, in a Broadway show, they chat with one another and then they sing. But in a lot of opera, they don't do the talking part as if they were speaking. They
right.
do the talking part as if it's a little sing-songy, speech, singing kind of an experience. And so you have a very different manner of communicating. And then frequently the aria is the moment of great personal expression that reveals someone's character and reaction to a situation.
Whereas the recitative moves the action along, but isn't necessarily in itself the great music.
Right. So again, in Opera 101, you're really looking for this defining concept that is a lot of what opera is made of. And of course, all of these things change over time, and so it gives people a chance to really contrast and compare just enough to feel comfortable saying, yeah, I think I'll go in there. I mean, look, anybody walking into the opera house nowadays, there's probably a 300-year, you know, period where the opera may be coming from three centuries of repertoire that's accumulated. And so if you know a little bit about where the composer is coming from, what the context he's writing in, and where the fun of it is, where the joy of it is, you know, you can say to yourself, well, okay, a guy and his girlfriend have a fight and he stabs her and that's the end of the opera. But there's a lot of singing that's going to go on before you get to that point. And some of those things are real traditions. You know, some of the things that you hear in opera are the tradition of two baritones singing together. Baritone is almost the lowest voice. Bass, you know, is a lower voice than a baritone. But two baritones singing together is a comic moment. One baritone is often the bad guy. But two singing together can be a funny thing. And there are certain traditions.
And that's just a tradition. There's nothing inherent about that.
Well, it's, you know, something that developed. And you know, opera takes all kinds of forms. There's comic opera. There's serious opera. There's opera that's kind of in between. And there's opera that's based on mythology. So when someone says, I don't like opera, it's like saying, I don't like life. I mean, just pretty much everything happens in opera, from, you know, crazy rituals to simple love stories.
Well, as your website says, lust, revenge, greed, murder, beheading, suicide, weird druid rituals, and cross-dressing. Like, don't expose your kids to this.
Well, I think, you know, the marketing department went wild there. and they picked...
Actually, that was me.
Oh, that was Kat. She finally fesses up. Well, I mean, those are some pretty extreme things. But, you know, to cut to the chase, most often an opera is about love. and it's about some kind of passion that one person has for another. So you can talk about all the other stuff.
Well, that's what most TV is about, and that's what most movies are about, too, unless they're super action movies. We haven't really gotten into car chase action operas, at least not yet.
Well, I'm sure that's coming.
But you do have cars on stage.
Yeah, for example, we had a talking about a girl who loves a soldier. There was an opera from, the early part of the 19th century. It's called The Elixir of Love.
That was so great.
Oh, you saw it. Terrific.
That was one of my favorites because the staging of it was so brilliant. They set it in what kind of World War II era setting with...
Just after World War II.
Yeah, yes. With billboards and a guy fixing his car and this great car on stage.
Yeah, the tenor was fixing his car. I mean, how many tenors fix their own cars? I don't know. That's a good subject for a dissertation, I'm sure.
Well, you know, the thing... I mean, okay, I'm going to do my own fessing up, which is that I hated all opera until I started doing this show and we started talking about opera every year with Desiree Mays, which we're going to do again this year. She writes a wonderful book every year to accompany the Santa Fe Opera. And what I found actually going to the opera every year four or five times and listening to it and watching DVDs and so on is that it turns out that once you get into it even a little bit, you don't hate opera. You just hate some operas. And you come to love other ones.
Yeah.
I don't think I will ever like Don Giovanni, mainly because every single character in it is loathsome in one way or another. But The Elixir of Love and, well, La Boheme happening this year and La Traviata are so good that you can't even believe that you're alive seeing this. It's so amazing.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I think when it all goes together and you really can relax and let it come to you, and if you have that little insider feeling about it, like, you know, this opera's not about the plot, this one's really about the singing. Or in this opera, the libretto, which is, you know, all the words that are going to be set to music. The libretto is a little booklet, right?
It's the script.
It's the story, basically. But sometimes the libretto is really tight, and the poetry in the libretto is fabulous, and the imagery in the libretto, and La Boheme's an opera that really exhibits a high degree of coherence of story. And at the same time, the way the music is set is so marvelously appropriate, fantastically imaginative, and it's heart-wrenching. You know, and you have a very powerful experience like that if the staging is good, and then the costumes are good, and then the singers are good, and then the lighting is good. And then you're really thinking about opera as a total art form, you know? You can read the stage, you can read the words, you can read the costumes.
And
sometimes
you get to read the words because there are subtitles.
Right, that's true. Now, in Opera 101, we'll have some handouts, we'll have some excerpts to contrast and compare, and the first part of it is really, it's down to collected works, and it's an opportunity to just get together and talk about opera, listen a little bit, look at the text. We have some things on exhibit that the opera will provide, you know, a beautiful costume and such. But we'll look at some of the terms, some of the structure, some of the history, and it's very lighthearted. It's very easy to digest. You know, I can't tell you how many people have said to me over the years, I've been lecturing at the opera for, I don't know, 13 years or so. And people come up and they say, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I don't know anything about opera. And I say, well, why should you be embarrassed to say that? And it's one of the mother art forms. You don't necessarily, it doesn't come with the set, you know what I mean? If you didn't grow up with it, or if somehow you didn't find your way into the opera house, there's a little, perhaps, a need for an icebreaker.
Right.
You know?
Well, people think it's this elitist art form, and you can say it is, and people point to the ticket prices and so on, but I have to say, first of all, aren't there opportunities to go to dress rehearsals?
Sometimes.
And in any case, you can go standing room there. You know, there's a way, if you really want to do it, there's a way you can get in without completely breaking the bank. But once you do, what's amazing about it is, especially with the title, you know, the I call them subtitles, I know that's not the right word, but with the English translation going across the screen in front of you, And with the incredible acting that so many opera singers are capable of these days and the real typecasting that they do, it's so accessible that it's really surprising if you've never been into it before.
That's really true. And, you know, a couple of things. One is that there are tickets that are priced, you know, under $30, or if you buy a subscription, you know, you're really able to get into the opera house and see all of the operas for a very reasonable price. At the same time, the accessibility, what you're talking about in terms of being able to understand the plot, to be able to understand the aria line by line, is dramatically improved. I mean, we have one of the state-of-the-art opera houses here in Santa Fe, where there's a little screen on the back of every seat, and you can watch the screen, watch the stage, and you get the sense of it.
And you know exactly what they're saying. It makes a huge difference.
Right. And, you know, for some people, opera used to be, you know, the spouse wants to go to see the opera, and the other one is sleeping because it's in a foreign language, and you read that opera synopsis in the program book, and it's, you know, some of them are bewildering. You know,
wacky even.
Well,
bewildering and wacky, or, as you say, really simple. Boy meets girl, girl gets stabbed, the end.
Well, it's hard for them to be simple because it's the Hamlet problem. You know, someone said, well, if Hamlet had killed his uncle early on, the play would be over and, you know, we would be at a loss for the greatest, you know, English drama. But at the same time, you look at an opera and you think, well, you're going to have a pretty high-level soprano on stage. Maybe you want her to sing more than one or two times.
Right, and she's got to die slowly and there's got to be a lot of drama. Well, but, okay, so all of this is Opera 101. We're talking to Oliver Prezant and Pat McEwen, who has been very quiet, but I want to let people know that there's something very interesting, which is the first part will be at Collected Works Bookstore, and then the second part will be at the Santa Fe Opera. What's going to happen when the group goes up to the opera?
Well, there'll be a chance to meet with some of the production people.
We're very fortunate to have people who've been involved with the opera for years. For example, we had the prop master last year who told some fabulous stories, and he brought some of the props that were used and were going to be used in the summer productions. So.
And it's a chance for people who may live in Santa Fe but have never actually been up at the opera. It's just an extraordinary experience. We'll be in the ranch one of the days and the other day in Stearin Hall, and then perhaps have a chance to do a little creative work of our own.
Exactly. Well, that's the good part, I think, because, you know, if you're going to feel a sense of comfort in the opera house and ownership of the medium, what better way than to, you know, get your feet wet trying to write a little bit of dialogue, for example.
But this is in groups, so yeah. People shouldn't be afraid of it. Last year, I believe there was a one-act opera set in Lithuania called Find the Cheese.
Well, Pat, I don't know if you're doing that justice, but no, I mean, really, let's look at it this way. If you have a line of text and you explore how to say it in different ways, that's a good theater exercise. But when I'm up there saying, hey, which is the word that we should really exalt by making it longer? What's the pacing of this line given the situation that we've created? And, you know, truth be told, we do have a few costumes and
props.
It's not mandatory that you put them on, but that's what's going to happen.
No, it's a lot of fun, really. And people come up with some hilarious ideas that rival some of the wackiest operas that Pat and I have seen.
Well, all of this is happening, Opera 101, in the first 2 weeks of March. And for more information, people can go to opera101santafe.com. Oliver Prezant is the music director and conductor of the Santa Fe Community Orchestra. He lectures for the Santa Fe Opera. Pat McEwen is with the Santa Fe Opera Guild. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.